Yo everyone, welcome back to Brand New Techish. We back again. I'm Michael Behane and I'm joined with the amazing
Abadesi.
Whoop whoop. Should we just get cracking with the stories?
Yes, please. And don't forget, you can join into the discussions using hashtag Techish anytime.
Hashtag Techish, we there on Twitter. Follow us. Shout out to our sponsor this week, Customer.io. They help you send targeted emails and push notifications and SMS, creating lower churn and great relationships and driving subscriptions. They are actually looking for a product manager and they're recruiting Pocket. Did you know that, Abba?
I did not know that.
It's a remote role.
Woop woop, remote working.
Remote working is the future. And then so all our budding product managers out there, experienced product managers that are listening, go check out the link in the show notes. And they're offering a starting salary between 90 to 110. Big
money. Six figures. You could sponsor Techish.
Yeah, you could. So if you're looking for a remote role and you're a product manager, link in the show notes. Go check out customer.io.
Customer.io.
So I think the first story involves you.
Me? Oh gosh.
Yes, it does involve you. And I want to let you take the floor with it because it's a story of intrigue, of betrayal, of...
setting this up like a soap opera.
Yeah, I should have been a scriptwriter for EastEnders. Anyway, go on.
Okay, nice.
You talk about it.
Well, I guess I just want to start with one question. Mm-hmm. When is it okay to lie?
Never.
Do you think it's okay to lie to people that you're trying to work with or people that you're trying to get involved with the project?
Absolutely not.
Okay, cool. So I'm glad we can start off with that. A few months ago, I was approached by the organizers of D&AD Festival.
Right.
So for people who aren't aware, D&AD are, I think they describe themselves as a global association for creative advertising and design.
They're a charity, right?
So they're definitely not a charity, but they are a non-profit.
They're a non-profit, okay, cool.
And they celebrate the creative industries, basically.
Okay, cool.
So they run an awards show, and they also run a festival every year alongside the awards show here in London. So basically, if you are in the creative industries, you would pay a membership fee to be a part of D&AD as an association. And this is anything from £100 up to £550. Tickets for the award show go into the hundreds of pounds. A few months ago, as I said, I was approached to be a speaker for the festival. And I immediately asked what their budget was for speaker fees. Mm-hmm. And this is just... this is what I do. Show me the money. I received a reply from their team explicitly stating, we do not compensate speakers. We do not pay speakers. All as a nonprofit, any money we generate goes directly into the work that we do to support the creative industry. So I was like, okay, this is interesting. Meanwhile, I'm kind of looking at the people who are already participating, and I see people I really respect and admire there, Paula and Nicole from Black Girl Fest, Liv Little from Galdem. So I'm like, okay, cool. I mean, if people are just doing this stuff to support the industry, let's go, let's get involved. Anyway, fast forward a few months down the line, this week, they nudged me, we haven't got your slides yet, you're speaking next week. They encouraged me to speak about my journey of building Hustle Crew, so the adversity that I faced as an underrepresented person within the tech industry and how I sort of turned that into something positive, right?
How ironic.
Anyway, same day that they chased me for these slides, I see a tweet from Paula, Black Girl Fest, and Nicole saying that they've pulled out of the D&AD Festival. They've withdrawn their participation because it came to their attention that D&AD were basically cherry-picking which black women they were going to pay and which they weren't. So they had offered them speaker fees, which goes against what they told me. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Liv Little of Galdem and another journalist that they approached to interview her on stage were both emphatically told no.
No budget.
There is no budget for speaker fees. So I now go back to them and I'm just like, okay, this is quite distressing because in the attached email, you told me that there's no budget for speakers and you're not paying speakers and you encouraged me to tell my story anyway. And now I'm seeing all this information out here from my friends and peers saying that some of them haven't paid, some of them haven't. This feels dishonest. I just want to know what your policy is. So the point of contact... actually never got back to me, and in the end the CEO did. And he gave it started with an apology. I unreservedly apologized, but then went into a sort of a defense. So it was a bit you know, 96 of speakers will not be paid. We only pay in exceptions where we're bringing people from outside the industry, you know, where it's like absolutely essential to have them. And I just kind of thought, but like Black Girl Fest, like how is that outside of the industry if we're celebrating like creative industries? And like, I mean, they're not that far.
No shade to them, but just like,
no, I mean, absolutely not. They're awesome, but like,
it just doesn't make any sense.
It's not like you're bringing.
The distinction makes no sense.
Yeah, like, oh, okay, Neil deGrasse Tyson, because he's a physicist. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, so I was just like, okay. So I just said, you know, I spoke with Nicole of Black Girl Fest, and, you know, we both feel very strongly. There seems to be this movement happening with corporations where they see this opportunity to take underrepresented voices, put them on stage to help them attract a diverse audience.
Right.
So what they're basically saying is, will you come and do emotional labor for us? Like, mm-hmm. will you put yourself out there mm-hmm. to attract like-minded people mm-hmm. so that we can profit from that?
And we look good.
But we do not think you deserve compensation for that.
Right.
That is just a new type of structural oppression, and I'm not standing for that. You know what I mean? This is capitalism.
Yeah.
You're getting paid. You're getting paid.
Yeah.
But I don't deserve to be paid.
That's what I'm saying.
Or should I be lucky that you let me on your stage?
Yeah.
Because there's some twisted dynamics happening here, and I don't like them. Anyway, everything that I do stands for, you know, knowing my worth and never settling for less. So I'm, you know, in solidarity with the other women I admire, and, you know, I've withdrawn from the festival. What would you do in my position?
I mean, to be honest, you have kind of been the one that's coached me to always try to, like, don't do stuff for free, make sure there's a budget, negotiate. There's a really sick article by Nafisa from Amalia. Where it was on Forbes, basically how to make sure you get paid as a person of color. And it's a step-by-step blueprint. I'll put it in the show notes, where she's like, if they give you a budget, just double it at 20%. See what happens. Just real talk, real gangster moves, because it's like, bro, like, a lot of times people are, you know, reaching out to you, asking you for advice, asking you essentially for consulting, with no credit going to be given to you, or asking to speak with no budget. And it's like, well, someone's getting paid in this equation.
Of course.
You're obviously getting a salary for your day job. So what? I don't get nothing. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, definitely. I mean, but let's not pretend. There are certain things that I would do for free if it was something I believed in, or if it was, if it was a, like, if TED was to be like, this is, you're going to be in front of 10 million people, do you want to come in here and just do this for free? You know what I'm saying? Everybody has to make that decision themselves.
Exactly.
But at the same time, don't lie and say no one's getting paid.
That
and
is
be like,
it.
We're paying certain people. Do you see
and
what I'm saying?
It, so many things. From day one, it felt a bit fishy because it was like, they already seemed to have an idea in mind of what they wanted me to talk about. And if anything's coming quite directive, it's like, okay, there's like some kind of intention here. Do I fully understand it? Am I being exploited? Like, you know, I'm sorry, but these are the questions that we have to ask ourselves. Like, if you are a minority in your industry and you're putting yourself out there, it's something that I think about all the time. I was like, do they want the story for the right reasons? You see what I'm saying? Because it's like, not everyone deserves our vulnerability. Like, Brene Brown talks about this all the time. I love her. She is amazing. And she says this, not everyone deserves your responsibility, like your vulnerability.
Right, yeah.
Because it, you know, it's important for us to be authentic, yes, but not everyone deserves our story.
Yeah, it's your story.
And I'm willing to share my story in the spaces where they will transform people, where people are going to come from a place of empathy and compassion and think, wow, I've really learned something here.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this into action either in my own life or in my team and how I approach the next problem, issue I solve, whatever. But if you're just coming here to like have a little sob story, pat yourself on the back, then go back to your homogenous circles and tell everyone about this, oh, so inspiring, this story I heard or this thing that I watched, but you're not going to do anything about it. No.
And even like doing stuff for free, it's like you might as well just build your own platform like we did with Tekish, in a sense. Now we have like thousands of people listening to us, and we put in a lot of free labor in the beginning. And it's, you know, it's reaped the rewards. We've got people listening to us. And it's like, why am I going to go to your conference and just speak for free? And it's like, I might as well just build my own thing.
Yeah.
Because it's the same. It's pretty much going to be the same result. I can build my own audience.
Yeah.
I don't need your audience. Anyways, the other thing I think that I found really fascinating is the fact that that it all came about because people spoke to each other.
Yeah.
So the various different speakers said like, yo, fam, like, are you getting paid? Because I'm not getting paid. And don't be afraid to reach out to
it's
your peers.
It's so important.
And just like, yo, we've got to do our own little unofficial union and be like, yo, who's getting paid? Is everybody getting paid?
Let's just talk about money.
Yeah.
The only people that win when we're not talking about money are the people that have all the money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when employers are like, oh, don't discuss salary. Yeah, of course I don't want you to discuss salary, because the person that's saying that's getting paid so much more than you that you would cry if you knew how much they were getting paid.
Yeah.
We have to talk about money. Like, financial inclusion is going to be, like, the dominant theme probably for the rest of our lifetimes as we think about, like, how to address the ugly side of capitalism.
Mm.
And one way that we get there is by talking about money.
So, yeah, it looks like the Uber IPO has, I wouldn't say tanked, it just hasn't done well. The market hasn't really received it. I think from what I've seen, people that put money into the private markets when Uber was still a private company from 2015 onwards are pretty much underwater, which means that if you invested in Uber after 2015, when it was still a private company, the company is now valued less, essentially.
Wah, wah, wah.
I mean, poor rich people, you know. I'm so sorry, guys. And I think the public, I mean, one, I think Uber took way too long to go public. It's a, quite a new trend. A lot of tech companies would go public within like 5 years. Uber's been a private company for like, you know, almost 10 years now. And I think the public markets are just like, nah, not buying it.
Yeah.
Unprofitable, doesn't seem to be a clear roadmap to profitability. And some of the best analysis I've seen is that someone said, I think it was on CNBC, he was like, the CEO of this company should be Bernie Sanders or like Elizabeth Warren, because essentially it's a wealth transfer of like rich people subsidizing rides for those of us to use it. Because we basically get a 30% discount. If you remember what taxes used to cost you back in the day.
I know.
You see what I'm saying? So it's actually a wealth transfer from the rich to the average person who wants to use it, you know, wants to get around town.
Yeah, like,
so we should
driver.
Be celebrating, like, yeah. But it's a whole different story if you're going to ask me to be an investor in this company, because I'm not an investor. I'm not going to go from...
Subsidizing
rights. Yeah, I ain't subsidizing anybody else's rights.
I saw that. That was on Twitter as well.
Yeah, so...
Sound
then,
argument.
Then the whole rumor started that it started seeing bubbling up. We spoke about it last week about, you know, Beyonce was paid in 6 million units of preferred stock. I'm not sure if it was preferred, but we know she got paid in equity essentially for a performance a while back. And people were like, yo, Beyonce made 300 million.
300 million?
300
That's
million.
A lot.
That's a lot of money. And if you remember, someone tweeted me actually like that story, because in the last episode, I said it looked like she might have made 3 to 4x just based on the valuation of the company.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's my estimate. That's my kind of rough estimate. Could have been wrong, but it looks like I lowballed it completely.
Let's dive into this $300 million figure.
Not to hate on Beyonce, and I don't want to pocket watch too much. I'm happy if she did get that kind of money.
Yeah.
But it doesn't
pocket
watch. But don't watch someone else's pockets, basically.
Nice.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'll keep up to date with the lingo.
I thought you meant pocket, as in people of color in tech watch.
No,
I was like, okay.
As in literally, like, watching your pockets. No. So, like, I think, yeah, it doesn't really ring true. That kind of multiple on the equity that she received, it doesn't really add up as far as my limited knowledge of Uber's valuations.
Well, yeah, I mean, FT Alphaville did a little story on this.
In the show notes.
And they basically, yeah, it'll be in the show notes, but they were like, it just wouldn't be possible. It would have meant that, like, she'd be getting more than, like, earlier investors did at better valuation. So, yeah, no, that was definitely, like, overstated.
And this is the thing that annoys me about social media.
Mm.
A lot of us know a little about a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know the headlines. I'm a headline queen.
We're headline readers. Like, there's no one doing the actual homework to be like, is this actually true?
Due diligence.
Yeah, and it's like, so for example, when Nipsey Hussle passed away, there was a story that came out that Jay-Z had like given Nipsey's children like 10 million.
Oh, wow.
And it went viral. Like, it was in like a lot of celebrities were posting about it saying, oh, well done, Jay. And then Jay's people had to come out and be like, this isn't even true.
Oh, my God.
And this is like...
We just want to believe it.
We just want to believe it. And also, it's never been easier just to spread quote-unquote fake news.
Yeah.
It's never been, especially news that makes us feel good.
Yeah.
It's never
We're so
easier.
Basic. Human beings, we are so basic. Do we even care about the truth? Like, do we even care
no,
about
we
it?
No, we don't care about the truth.
I mean, I personally do. I personally
you
do.
You think you do, but you don't.
I want to critique stuff. But at the same time, we're so driven by our emotions that if something makes me feel better... For example... This is related to the Michael Jackson thing.
Go on, yeah.
Because even when we're presented with like contradictory evidence or something, if something that we believe in or have heard about makes us feel so good or positive about an otherwise dreary life, we're not trying to hear it.
Yeah, it's true. I agree.
Yeah. So let me believe that Beyonce made 300 million.
I want to. Yeah. Yeah. Beyonce made 300 million and she's going to invest in Tech-ish and we're going to be the biggest podcast in the world. I want to believe that. You know what
starting
I'm saying?
Starting a fund. Tech-ish beehive.
Well. Yeah.
Let's
but
go.
It's just like, I feel like we've just got to cut out. And this is generally within the kind of quote unquote conscious community.
Mm.
We've got to cut the romanticism out. Because this whole thing, we're all kings and queens. We weren't all kings and queens. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with that. You see what I'm saying? But we want to believe the most rosy picture of the story because we've been fed such bullshit for our whole existence for the last 400 or 500 years. And I don't know, it's a reach right now. But I was making the point that sometimes we want to believe things that aren't the case because it gives us a warm and fuzzy feeling. And I don't know, maybe there is an upside to it, but there is obviously going to be a downside to it as well.
We need to understand the risks. I think also, like, question sources. I'm not saying you shouldn't get your news from Twitter, but, like, question the source of the news. Like,
that's hard work.
You're not going to see Bloomberg. You're not going to see Bloomberg, like, quoting fake news. At least you hope you wouldn't. You know, like, there is some kind of hierarchy of sources out there, and you're not going to be, like, buying into a story from, like, one account with, like, zero followers.
Yeah.
It's clearly a spam bot. I don't know. I just think, like, school isn't teaching us, like, what we need to know. Like, we need to learn how to be, like, critically analyze things.
This is all new,
though. No. Like, tools required for rational thinking, that's not new. Like, there's just more information to disseminate, more content to filter and sift through.
You know what,
but the tools haven't changed.
When you were at university, were they, like, they always said to you, don't source Wikipedia.
That
was like lesson number one. Don't source Wikipedia. Ironically, I wish more people would, because that actually probably is a greater source of truth than some random Joe blog.
What are you talking
Come
about?
On, I'm serious.
Oh my
Wikipedia
God.
Actually has people that vet it, and you can't, like, I mean, there might be some lies that get put on there for 10 minutes, but then there are reams of open source people. Not just it's an open source community of people that kind of come in and correct it. So there's more truth on Wikipedia than like some random blog like the Shade Room or something like that that's saying Beyonce might have made 300 million.
But who's gonna be quoting the Shade Room on their freaking sociology essay at university?
We'll come back. I don't really mean do that at university. I just mean in principle. But anyways, alright, cool.
Checking sources.
Check your sources, people.
Check your sources.
So, I want to give a quick recommendation. Great podcast by Naval, who's the co-founder of Angelist.
No sponsorship.
I'm not getting paid for this.
That's the only drop you get.
It's a really interesting format, though. Each podcast episode is about 5 minutes long.
Nice.
And people said our ones are too short. Like, so 5 minutes long. So, one of the episodes that had me thinking, he says, be the best at what you do and keep redefining what you do until it's true.
I like this.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, so for me, for example, I am not the best software engineer in the world, nor am I the best designer in the world. But I'm an okay full-stack designer slash developer. But when you add to the fact that I know about media, and then I also know about, you know, what's going on in the culture, and then I'm also an okay speaker, and I become a podcaster. Once you combine all those things together, it starts to get into a little niche where all of a sudden I'm like in the top 25% maybe, right? So it's one of those things where nobody can outcompete Joe Rogan at being Joe Rogan. Nobody can outcompete Oprah at being Oprah. So just keep working on your niche as long as you're creating value and keep redefining what you do till eventually you are in your top field. You're in the top 10% in what you do.
Nice.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
How do you think that can apply to everyone individually? It's difficult.
It is difficult because I think, like, as I get older as well, I kind of realize, like, the perspective that time gives you, and there's no substitute for that.
Right.
Right? There's no substitute for the perspective that time gives you. Someone like Naval is, like, what, in his 40s or something?
Maybe
late 40s. 50,
yeah.
Maybe even 50. I don't know. Brown don't crack either, so hard to tell. But you're able to, imagine, like, the world and, like, your understanding of society and markets and all these kind of things. It's, like, lots of different moving pieces sort of, like, floating around in space. And it's, like, as you get older, you sort of understand how they fit together better.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, therefore, easier for you to, like, reflect on your own career and kind of go, like, okay, what's my niche? What's the niche of my niche of my niche? But that said, I think the way that I would apply it is, like, the more senior I am in my career, like, the more I would, like, force myself to go down the niche. You see what I'm saying?
Of course,
because I think, like, if you're in your early 20s, mm-hmm. so maybe you've, like, finished university, or if you didn't go to university, you're in the first years of your career,
mm-hmm.
you're still, like, at a relatively junior level, approaching mid kind of level of seniority within a company, let's say a tech startup, whatever. I don't actually think at that stage, if you're planning to just, like, be an operator within a company and, like, mm-hmm. not trying to found anything or raise money, it's that important for you to, like, narrow down beyond I'm a front-end developer. I love playing with HTML and CSS. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I just love this. I love playing games. I love, designing things, like, making it fun, whatever. I think it's more as you get older. So, like, once you're just approaching a point of, like, you know, seniority, where you want to get paid, like, you know, $1,000 a day for, like, consulting and, you know, whatever, like, be in books, be featured in, like, newspapers, that's when you really need to start thinking about, like, what makes you more interesting than just a front-end developer. Like, are you the only front-end developer, like, in this remote island, in the South Pacific, building...
Who knows about crypto, for example?
Exactly. Like,
I mean, there's crypto developers getting paid, like, thousands of pounds and dollars a day just because they are, you know, they have that speciality. You know what I'm saying?
So, like there's this guy, like, I watched a video on BBC News about... a guy in Argentina who's like, you know, 19 years old, but he is the best hacker. The best hacker. So cybersecurity experts around the world pay him a lot of money to find the vulnerabilities in their code.
Right.
So he can say, I am the best at exposing vulnerabilities in code bases. Like, you know what I mean? So like, I definitely think there is some truth in that. And I think like, I would just like add to that like niche can be defined in so many ways, like including your identity and your background. So it's not just about like, these are my skills, like especially for people from like underrepresented backgrounds, like this is our time. Like it was never like, you know, it was never more socially acceptable, if not valuable, to be exactly who you are, because the more unique your experience, the more it needs to be heard and the more important it is. I mean, obviously, we still have the D and ADs out there trying to mess about.
But
for the most part, people will, like, pay you what you're worth.
I do
think it's really interesting. I think it's also quite inspiring because it just kind of makes you realize, like, wow, like, gone are the days where there was this cookie cutter template of success, Ivy League, MBA, boom, boom, boom. Now what we're basically saying is like, oh, the more unique you are, the more valuable you become.
And the more authentic. And even one of his other podcasts is basically says, escape competition through authenticity, which I love. Because essentially, I've had, so with Pocket Jobs, I've had companies come to me and sometimes I ask them, why have you chose us to work with us? And they're like, normally it's a person of color who's working, who's the recruiter. He's like, I can tell that you guys are authentic and that you guys like actually, there's a certain flavor that you have that I can tell resonates with the community. That
it's legit.
It's legit.
It's not fake.
You see what I'm saying? And that's all me. I've baked myself into the product.
Mm.
So I'm like, why do I want some boring product? I want to have something where there's gifts and like, you know what I'm saying? And the photos are looking legit and, you know what I'm saying? And the type, the content.
It has vibe. Yeah, it has flavor.
And before, when you grow up in school, you kind of taught the opposite. You're told, be sauceless.
Stay in line.
Yeah, stay in line.
Sauceless.
Yeah, be sauceless. Yeah,
no
be
sauce.
Stay in line.
No,
yeah,
sauce.
No sauce. Like,
keep it dry.
Now, be yourself. Even on this podcast.
Put all the pepper on there. All the pepper.
Yeah, even on this podcast, we talk as we normally do. Like, I'm not going to hold myself back from saying things in slang or swearing if I have to. And that's just how I speak.
Yeah, I actually rough myself up a bit to look cooler.
Anyways, cool. Yeah, so be authentic and keep redefining what you do, people. So, okay, cool. Me and Abba.
Oh my god, I'm literally rolling my eyes at you.
Me and Abba just had a disagreement off mic, but we're going to carry on the story.
Okay. I want to talk about Gucci's turban.
Okay.
Gucci's 600 pounds turban.
I'm not familiar with the story, but
that made the news.
Yeah.
And the way that brands are now hijacking free press.
Right.
By basically publicity stunts.
Yeah.
It's just a new type of publicity stunt. Game of Thrones did it with the Starbucks cup blooper.
Okay, cool.
That reportedly generated like hundreds of millions of dollars worth free advertising and social media reach for them. So here's the story. Gucci, one of the best well-known fashion houses, luxury fashion houses, has been selling £600, $790, depending where you are in the world, a turban as a style accessory. Now, you know, we obviously know that this is not a style accessory. If you are of the Sikh religion, it is part of your faith to wear a turban. Lots of different cultures wear the turban in different ways. It's just another example of just like inappropriate cultural appropriation. None of the proceeds are going to support any like Sikh communities or anything like that. They're just trying to like vibe in this way, and it's just totally inappropriate. But here's what I'm saying. this is not the first time we see a big brand mm-hmm. that knows better. Let's face it, they know better. They have PR advising them, comms advising them. Think of how many people that had to they had to go through with the design and the idea before it actually then so got into the manufacturing.
The crux of our disagreement is that you think it's intentional in order to, yes. to gen up PR, basically.
Yes.
Whereas I think it's more down to incompetence, and I think it's more down to the fact that there is nobody in the room that can speak to that experience or knows what why this would be offensive. I feel like it's just a very homogenous room and they don't know, they don't have a clue. So for example, the H&M, remember the, do you remember the coolest monkey in the jungle?
Yeah.
Like, to me, I never ascribe to conspiracy what can be ascribed to incompetence. Like, if I see something, I'm like,
it's not conspiracy.
It's conspiracy. Come so on. It's legitimately a conspiracy. You're saying they're sitting around a table thinking, how can we like rile up, you know, certain ethnic groups and turn this into PR? That's a conspiracy.
I'm not saying it did it like that. I'm just saying someone could have been like, oh, this could be offensive. And someone's like, great.
I feel like
there's no such thing as bad publicity.
I feel like it's just a colonial mindset of just like, how do we monetize other people's cultures? I don't even think
I want to hear what people think.
Okay,
yeah, I
cool.
don't agree.
So do you think that it's conspiracy or do you think it's just like
stop labeling it conspiracy? Do you think it's the stupid answer or the smart answer?
No, because the word conspiracy theory now is maligned, but conspiracies do exist. You see what I'm saying? There are real conspiracies. People this sit in a room and do decide things. That's a conspiracy. Someone says to me, oh, was 9/11 a conspiracy? Is it, yeah, 19 hijackers sat down and conspired to do 9/11. I don't believe that, you know, I'm not a 9/11 truther. But even that is a conspiracy, even if you believe the official story. You see what I'm saying?
I'm just saying that a conspiracy is
it intentional
a secret
or unintentional?
Plan to do something naughty. I'm just saying that, like, at some point, someone was like, this could be offensive. And someone else was like, good. Let it be offensive.
I love this.
Because
okay, cool.
Then we'll get more publicity.
I'll leave it to the people. I think most people are going to agree with you. I think I'm
more.
Oh, that,
oh,
yeah, yeah. I think most people agree with
me. Sounds like you agree
with
me.
I'm moonwalking. All right, cool. So we were asked actually by some of our people on Twitter to talk about the idea of
making your
leaving
employer.
Your job, leaving your job.
Yeah.
To start a company. Should you leave your job to start a company if you're going to go start up, or should you just stay in your current company and do it as a side project? And I think side hustle all the way. I think both me and Abba are going to say the same thing. We both agree that you should always stay at your job, work on your side hustle. If it takes off, then leave and use your employer as essentially your angel investor. They're paying you. That is your capital now to start your company. But don't get twisted. This is a kind of a young person's game because you have to have a lot of hours into this whole hoopla, innit? But that's what I'm going to say. Don't quit your job if you haven't got nothing cracking. You see what I'm saying?
Agreed.
And also, one thing I mentioned in Twitter, I was reading Shoe Dog, which is the book about the founder of Nike. And he didn't leave his job as an accountant until Nike was doing millions of dollars in sales. He was an accountant for like 10 years while Nike was still going.
Who was running it?
He was doing it on the side.
Damn.
He was a hustler. He just had people like selling for him.
A hustler, babe.
Yeah, so like if Nike can start that way, your company can start
that way. You can start that way.
Like, so that's my, you know, that's my
also like let's just like know the risk. Like know the risk profile. Like do you want to be stressed and broke and tired? Okay, please.
You've done it.
Run.
Speak from experience. Go on.
Yeah, exactly.
You've done both at the same time.
I have done both. And you know, like I mean, even when I was on the Alpha team, which I'm not anymore, like that's just stuff is exhausting. It's a lot of work. It's very tiring, you know? Like, being back to my old life, working at Product Hunt, having Hustle Crew as a side hustle, like, I am a lot healthier and happier as a result of it.
But speak on how Hustle Crew has actually benefited from you having a day job.
Yeah. So, when I did Hustle Crew full-time, the network that I needed to convert sales was, like, there, but I wasn't converting. And then being a part of Product Hunt and AngelList, I mean, from day one, they were very interested in that work.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, let's do the inclusion workshops in the teams. Let's talk to our clients about this. Like, literally within my first month at Product Hunt, I was on a call with Sequoia.
Wow.
Talking about, you know, the type of work that I do and, like, you know, potential to do workshops. And I just think, like, there's actually, like, a level of validation and credibility, especially if your employer is supportive of you, that comes with that you can't get if you're on your own. You know what I mean? Because like I'm operating specifically within tech, and I'm offering a service to tech companies, to tech leaders. So to be in a tech organization and have that as my side business and have their support actually has opened more doors for me. And my friends and my network than if I had just been on my own in isolation because it's just that extra check. So yeah, I mean, I'm all about doing the side hustle life. Side hustle. Cool.
So the royal baby was on Earth for like one day before it received racism.
First literally royal baby.
One day. Like it couldn't have, like, you know how people are like, oh yeah man, you know, I mean,
I was 8 years really... old before I realized I was black.
Yeah, like, you know, people are like, yeah, the baby's, you know, I mean, it's not really black, you know, like it's like, you know quarter, you know, like African-American, so it doesn't really count. Boy, like, you you know what I'm saying, we all soon found out what's really up. So Danny Baker, who is like he's BBC like presenter or radio personality. I don't know who he was at all. He tweeted a picture of an old fashioned Victorian couple with a monkey helping a monkey get down the stairs, and tweeted out saying, the royal baby is here. Insinuating that the baby is the monkey. And he was since fired. He was apologetic at first, but then he was kind of like standoffish later on.
Defensive.
And he got a standing ovation at his first like performance, like in front of a British audience. So, yeah, I don't know what to say really. There isn't much to say
other than the fact that like he then went on to do a show where he got a standing ovation. I mean, look, I'm not saying we need to destroy free speech and people can't do whatever, blah, blah, blah. But we can't let people be racist. And that's just incredibly inappropriate, especially for someone in a position of his power. And for the record, people that don't know this, maybe outside the UK, the BBC is funded by taxpayer money. Yeah. Okay? So this is a guy who is receiving his salary from the taxes of black and brown people coming out there saying black people are monkeys. So,
and the thing is, he claimed that he didn't know that. Yeah, so he's
that was offensive.
Yeah, so he's either really stupid to not know historical connotation, or he deserves to lose his job just based on stupidity alone. So he's either really stupid or he's really racist.
Yo, everybody, that brings Techish to a close. We'll catch you next week, obviously, not me too upset. And like, yeah, so just like leave us a review.
#Techish.
Subscribe.
If you enjoyed listening, you know, why not forward it on to a friend?
Because actually I was looking at this website called Chartable, where you can see like podcast thingies, like rankings, and like we're doing all right, you know, top 20 UK, like in tech, like, but if we want to get to the top, we need your help. So like, I think reviews and recommendations, it's all very helpful. But yeah, and also send us an email, techishpod@gmail.com, if you've got any questions, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Ciao.